What's going on, Big MX Radio listeners? It's your boy Brad Hebert here, and you probably noticed that there's been a little bit of changes to Big MX Radio over the last 6-8 weeks, roughly. Rather large change of sort of situation went on with me, but the podcasts are still rolling out on Instagram more than ever, probably. Just trying to sort of pivot, move, and create cool content. And this podcast is no different. I hope that you guys enjoy it. First and foremost, before we get straight into this, I want to give a huge shout out to Backyard Designs. First of all, if you haven't been to backyarddesigns.com, please, I think it's backyarddesignsusa.com, please go check it out. And they've got some customizing tools for you to create your own graphic kit that is pretty much pretty unreal. Like, you can do it on a laptop, you can do it on your phone if you really want to. I do it on my desktop, and in about an hour, I can play with all the colors, move around all the logos, you can upload your own logos, and create something that's 100% completely custom, your own, you're happy with it, hit the thumbs up, and then you can go ahead and print the damn thing. So I really, really like that whole program. Honestly, like, by the time you're done designing your own graphics, you're just excited to hit print. You don't even care what it costs. I think most of the kits come around $230, which is pretty reasonable. And honestly, the wear and tear that I've had on the kit that I have on the bike right now, and I'll admit I maybe not be as hard on bikes as a top level Supercross pro, but I'm really impressed with how they hang up so far. So I've coupled that with a pair of W wheels and a Guts Racing seat. I actually did the full seat thanks to Andy over at Guts Racing. It was fantastic. Honestly, I had to do up my pants a little bit tighter because the grip on the Guts seat was literally pulling the back of my pants down when I'd be on the seat cover. It was pretty wild. I've never experienced that before, so pretty stoked on that. I know it's almost Loretta's time. Regionals are clicking off pretty much every weekend, so I did want to give a huge shout out to Money Inc. They've got a ton of young athletes, whether it's on the 50s, the Cobras, they've got kids on 65s, Super Minis, you name it, even some kids on the bigger bikes. They're making horsepower, and they're sending an entire team of riders to Loretta Lynn's. There's going to be a lot of kids on the podium at Loretta's thanking Money Inc. So maybe go check those guys out. Lux on MX. If you want to talk about adjustability and basically having a couple of different sets of triple clamps in one purchase, Lux on MX is the place to go. It's an American company. They're fantastic. The owner, Billy, he's unbelievable to work with. You can get, if you want to pay for the anodizing, you can pretty much get any color under the sun. That's how they were able to do that for the Club MX guys. But thanks to all of the sponsors, guys. RXR Protect, those guys are awesome. Moto Coatings Company, We Big Moto Co. You guys have probably seen me on Instagram doing the videos in a lot of Moto Co. or a big We Big Moto Co. stuff. I'm a huge fan of their stuff. I'm still waiting on a set of handlebars from Fast Company so I can try out their flex bars, but I've heard only good things. You guys know that I don't have breakfast without some Heartbeat hot sauce, and we're 3.5 minutes into the podcast. You haven't talked dirt bikes yet, so let's get after it. Thank you guys for listening, and thanks to all the sponsors who make this podcast possible. Welcome to the Big MX Radio Podcast. I am your host, Brad Gebhardt. With me on the line, you've heard him on a lot of these podcasts lately, but he's just so damn good. He's so damn knowledgeable. I got to keep having him on, mainly because he'll also take my call. Andrew Hopson. Hoppa, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for giving me another opportunity to do this again. It was a good time last week, and looking forward to breaking this down this week. There was some highlights. There was some action. There was everything last weekend.
Oh, we got the whole rigmarole. We got the back to front, A to Z, what have you. It was Hangtown, which is a track that has been on the series basically as long as we've been racing in North America at all. Absolutely storied spot, although the track is in a different location than it was originally in many, many, many moons ago. But before we sort of break down the Sacramento National, I think you are about to embark on a trip that's going to see you racing a CR500. Peek behind the curtain a little bit of your weekend plans, my friend.
I'm about to head to Utah tomorrow morning. I'm going to race the Masters of Moto X. Interesting story. I seen an ad for this, or Instagram ad for to do this race, there was a 500 class and there was free entry for the 500 class. I'm like, well, I have a CR 500, so let's not drive 8 hours for a free entry. Everyone I told, they said that makes perfect sense. So how could I not go for a free entry for 8 hours of driving? So looking forward to practicing on Friday and doing four motos on Saturday. So it's going to be awesome. Two strokes only, 500 class. Hope there's a full gate. Nothing better than a full gate, 500.
Absolutely. If someone goes to the grave without hearing an entire gate of 125s, 250s, or 500s storming off the gate all at once, you seriously, seriously miss out. And you are the proud owner of a 1990 CR 500. It's in gorgeous condition, and you even had somebody build a cone pipe for you.
Yeah, you know, I ended up building one for myself, right? Just because I could.
Because you have that the ability to, and then everyone's going to now take note of that and end up in your DMs asking you to build one.
Yeah, that happens all the time. I tend not to do as many as I used to in the days, but you never know. It is possible at times.
It certainly
is. You need the bike, though. That's the thing. You need the bike. You can't just build them off. You know, you need the bike to make them fit.
So, yeah. So unless somebody happens to live in Corona, California, with a bike that's rather exotic, looking for a cone pipe, and also has the time to have that bike down for like how quickly could you turn one around? Like, if I had my 04 KX125, if I said, "Hoppo, this thing needs to have a cone pipe on it," how quickly can you turn that thing around?
Probably one and a half days, depending on. There's a few little factors there, like because I don't build them too often, I got to go back and learn the CAD system again and you know, get the radiuses and the blending and then pounding all the welds down so they're all smooth. So that takes a little bit of time to get your eye back in the business. But probably around a day and a half on something like that. 500 pipe, you're looking around 2 days. There's a lot of metal there.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The same thing, like if I have to draw it, it's definitely a lot longer. If it's something that I can reproduce that I've already drawn and I can just print out the patterns, that definitely cuts the time in half. So it depends. And honestly, there hasn't been too many where I've duplicated. They've all been one-off. So there's a lot of CAD drawing to, you know, to make it fit and get the shape right and all that sort of stuff. So there's a little bit going on there. I mean, opposed to the old days when we used to build them on bandsaws before we had CAD programs, I mean, that was a whole nother animal, you know. So, but the CAD program's good for now.
I think my new favorite thing about all of these podcasts that you're on is I need to spend like 5-10 minutes just like picking your brain about random two-stroke shit. That's like a perfect way to like pull the listener in because they're like, excuse me, what is all this crazy information about cone pipes? Like when Ricky Carmichael turned pro, he was getting a cone pipe every single race that he was winning. And then Mitch Payton was like, fuck that. And
that got blown out pretty quickly in 97,
yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. No one expected this kid to just start rattling off wins like he's Jet Lawrence or something like that. But although it's funny. Of all people, like, of all things that Jet Lawrence has not done or didn't do was do a lot of winning as a rookie in the 250 class.
Yeah, I mean his season was kind of up and down and getting his feet wet. So I mean he just skyrocketed in the last 2 or 3 years, right?
Like yeah.
once he worked it out and had some good people around him and you know seen the path, he definitely accelerated pretty quick. And then, you know, when you look at that race on the last few weekends, you know, him and his brother do that week in and week out. So, you know, he obviously had Hunter to build off and work with for a long time. So, you know, he was always in good company and good circles, that's for sure.
Absolutely. If I'm not mistaken, Jet Lawrence, the very final overall victory at Paula. I think it was his first overall victory, but it was the last one for Geico Honda.
Yeah, correct. That was right. You're dead right on that. And that was all. It was Geico coming to a screeching halt straight after that.
Yeah, you were a part of that. That's like
I was a part of that.
Yeah,
for a few years, and then things were starting to change there already. And you know, there was opportunities there to move on and you know change careers a little bit from there.
Fair enough. Sounds like there's some more things that we can peel back the layers on, but that's not what we're here to do on this podcast. We're here to break down Hangtown, and I did not intend for that to rhyme, but it did anyway. This kid has really started to come into his own. You can say a lot of things about Hayden Deegan, positive and negative, but you cannot take anything away from this kid's riding. Two overalls in a row, a points lead, to show for it, three out of four moto victories on the weekend. It probably should have been another moto sweep, if not for, doing what can only be considered a helicopter move, off of his motorcycle. He was, like, I usually only see some stuff like that in, figure skating, but yeah, he went for, a little bit of a whirly bird. Up over top of his motorcycle in the second moto, but let's just talk about your points leader for a second here, the 38 machine out of Temecula, California. The California rounds of the Nationals are now done. We're heading off to Thunder Valley in Lakewood, Colorado, but not after a couple of really impressive rounds from Hayden Deegan.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's, like you said, he's won three motos. He was leading the fourth. You could call it whatever. You could break it down. I mean, he blew it off on the podium that he was under pressure. He just said, you know, the bike kicked out, skipped, whichever way. I mean, that track was rough.
Yeah, no.
I mean, I watched it on a laptop on the way home from Glen Helen because I raced on Saturday. And, like, I'm watching it sitting in traffic and I'm all like, God, I'm glad I don't have to, you know. I was complaining at 4-inch chop at Glen Helen as opposed to ruts that were peg deep, right?
Yeah.
So the strength that these guys have had and the ability to press, you know, process things at those speeds. Would I have thought Valet would have caught him? I kind of thought personally that he was going to, regardless of him crashing. We'll never know whether that is true. But again, three from four. He's like, you got a 4-point lead. He's going to be tough. I think Valet can still beat him some days, but it's going to be a tough slog to Tom, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's honestly a little bit almost too bad that Hayden went down for, obviously, because you don't want to see somebody crash, but we're never going to know whether or not Tom was going to get him because Hayden ended up on the ground. And it was quite the crash, and it's actually amazing that he was able to stay in second. He was able to regroup, remount, and I think that's a testament to just how much time he had put into the rest of the field. Levi Kitchen, third on the day, with a pair of third places in the two motos. Chance Hymus gets a podium in a moto. He'll round out your top four. But we talked about this after the first round. I seriously think these three guys have separated themselves. I think Hymus is going to have good motos. I think you're going to see Joe Shimoda have good motos. And guys like Julian Beaumaire, Casey Cochran, you might even see like a hero moto from a guy like Jordan Smith. But dollars to donuts, the rest of the season, your top three is going to be Hayden Deegan, Tom Vial, or Levi Kitchen in some order, if not in that order. These three have really separated themselves. They've been the three guys on the podium both rounds so far.
Oh, for sure. I mean, Kitchen, you know, he first year on the Cowie. So there's some teething that room there and getting to know the team and the bike. He's happy there as far as I know. So he's only going to get stronger. I'm impressed with Hymus for as much injuries and seat time that he has missed. And it was, you know, a fourth on the weekend in front of his teammate Joe. You know, it's good to see that generation coming through as well. And you look at Pierce Brown, he's slowly coming through. Swole, yeah. Top 10. I mean, Masterpool, brand new team, second. I mean, he was up there in the second moto. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a little bit of time to process some of that and fill back into that. Again, Bormer, first real national series and sitting inside the top 10. That's some pretty impressive results there for some of those young kids, I think. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And even to sort of add to that separation now, just inside the top 10, you have Jalik Swole, who has a DNF. You have Joey Savacci that also has a mechanical DNF. We're mm-hmm. seeing a little bit of the gremlins and basically just how demanding the outdoor series is. Like, obviously, they haven't had those issues over in Europe with the MXGP rounds, but it's motocross, things can happen, and a new manufacturer, a new platform is always a little bit more susceptible to these types of issues, there's research and development for a reason. As bikes develop and they get more time and the solutions come to these machines, you have a lot less of these situations. Both Jalik Swoll's and Joey Savacci's issues, they seem different, but the result was the same, which is a moto where they weren't able to score some points. If not, both were probably looking at a situation where they're both in the top six in points. But yeah, it's been interesting to see, but even more so, I think that sort of just kind of doubles down on the fact that the top three are separated by under 20 points. And then you have, the rest of the field, including Chance Hymus, are well 20, they're 20 points plus back. To me, that basically just shows, even just after two rounds, there is a definitive difference between the top three and everybody else.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Absolutely. Like I said, and I think that, you know, the top three are definitely experienced guys. I mean, Valet is a world champion.
Yep.
You can't take that away from him. Deegan is the new prodigy coming through, and he's got every bit of inch of support to help him get through that. Does Valet have a little more in the bag, a little more finesse coming down to a championship? He won a Supercross championship, and he's got world championship titles, so he's going to be a solid guy. So, and he's got to learn those tracks. I mean, both guys are typically in the same sort of thing. Some of these tracks, they're only getting, you know, an hour practice max before they're wide open. So, and that's a whole nother ball game, right? To be able to learn some of these tracks, adapt to how rough they get so quick, and be on point.
Yeah, you think of a guy like Chance Hymus. I don't think he has a lot of time in at Hangtown, and he doesn't even live far from there. He's an Idaho kid, so he might have actually qualified, done some area qualifiers, some regional qualifiers at Hangtown before. But there's a ton of racers that probably have not spun a ton of laps at a place like Hangtown. You get, I think, what is it, like five minutes to sort of just wheels on the ground, and then the green flag goes, and basically all these guys just go for it. And it's incredibly amazing. Honestly, every time I go to an outdoor national, all I can say to myself is I don't ask enough out of my motorcycle. And sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm really pushing this bike. I'm not. I'm super not at all really pushing that dirt bike. But yeah, these guys get the most out of it. Other notables in the 250 class that sort of jump out to me that I saw that I really enjoyed and it was very encouraging to see was Ty Masterpool, the 29 machine, reminding me of Ivan Tedesco back in the day, of course, on that Pro Circuit Kawasaki, looking good out there.
Yeah.
Sticking his nose in on Deegan a little bit. Like,
right.
There was a couple of spots he had a little bit more momentum. He was able to take some swings.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's you know, I remember watching that, and that was kind of what I spoke about a little earlier, where he probably pulled off there and went, I think I can beat that guy at some point, but there's a few other steps in place before that can happen. But he showed that he could close the gap on him, right? And that's only the second week on the bike, or second race.
Yeah.
Any way you want to look at it, which means that
he's been on that bike 10 days.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's, you know, which goes to show he is beatable, because Masterpool obviously caught him. And at one point, I thought he was going to pass him. But then again, like you said, 10 days on a bike tends to have some other holdbacks at times.
Absolutely. So, but it's encouraging to see. Same thing, a huge move forward for a couple of guys. In fact, they were the only, actually there's four three-digit numbers in the top 20. Brock Bennett from Bakersfield. You know, that's almost a local at that point, because Bakersfield, I wouldn't call that NorCal, but it's certainly, I wouldn't really consider it SoCal either.
Close.
Yeah, well, it is, like it's north of LA, but it's BroCal. I'm sure that Mr. Bennett has quite a few laps at Hangtown. But Julian Beaumere, like, he's up there. He had great starts, both motos. I'm looking at the whole shot here. Third off the first moto, fifth off the second moto. So the KTM's getting the power to the ground out of Lake Havasu, California. Looking great. Maybe it's like being like the coastal tracks being so close to the ocean. He just feels more at home that way. I'm completely kidding. Mm-hmm. But Casey Cochran out of Florida, who has definitely never been there before, he literally admitted that he had never gone to Hangtown ever before. Fastest qualifier, completely pulls that out of his ass. And then a couple of good starts and good motos, a 12-12 on the day, somehow good enough for 10th overall.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a, like you said, to, you know, we both know, even at our levels, like to go ride a new track and perform, like that's just a whole nother ballgame. That's just a whole nother level of intensity, that's preparation. Right. Like you know, he's obviously good at what he is. And in terms of like when you look at, you know, from a team manager or a team perspective where you have, you know, Valet sitting in second, you have Gorma sitting in ninth. You've got two of your key lights guys in the top 10 leading California. I mean, that's a good team, right? You got Cochran in his second national sitting in 10th. So, I mean, that's awesome for some of those guys. I expect Savacci will bump up somewhere along the line. He will have a, he's good at,
I think, as early as this weekend coming up. I like,
yeah.
Colorado, and not only pro circuit, but in the past, but Colorado and Joey Savacci have been very good friends in the past.
Yes. Yeah.
So sure. I would expect Joey to take a step up. I would not surprise to see Joey on the podium, at least in a moto coming up. Obviously he has the DNF this last weekend, which hampers the results. And that's honestly the reason why a guy like Casey Cochran is 10th in points, because you had Jordan Smith and Savacci, who had one moto, no points, and then the other moto where they're inside the top 10. But yeah, is there anybody else that sort of stuck out to you as being really impressed as far as, or maybe somebody that sort of scratched your head a little bit in the results from the 250 class?
I mean, Cody Shock, after his good Supercross season, I know he broke his collarbone. I thought that, you know, he may have been a little further up in the points. I'm not saying
I'd agree with that, like
10 or something like that, but I
color me surprised that he's the leading Club MX rider so far this year. And actually, I don't think he's gotten beaten by any of his teammates. Actually, yes, in the first moto he went 33-13, so actually he ended up 18th overall, but he probably should have been somewhere closer to the Bennick Thrasher battle than he was to Cody Shock and the rest.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, sometimes, you know, like he had a good Supercross season. Like I said, he had an injury, but sometimes it takes some of these guys a little while to switch over from Supercross to motocross. I mean, we used to deal with that at PC a little bit,
yep,
because it's so Supercross focused. And then, you know, like Ramsey would win, and then you go to the second national and he's, you know, 18-25, and you know, what the hell, man? So, but I think that just comes with
maturity. Is that when Mitch bought him running shoes?
That was one of the times, I think. And then they sent him a box of spark plugs back because the split fire tips broke off. But, you know, Nick Way sent some NGK plugs to him.
Yes.
A little friendly fire.
I heard a funny story about that, is that, like, Mitch sent spent the entire team running shoes, and, like, mm-hmm. And Nick was all, like, Nick Way was pissed. He's like, this is BS, yeah. I'm in shape, blah, blah, blah. And, like, Nate Ramsey was like, sweet shoes. Thanks, Mitch.
As Nathan, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like,
but then they got together and sent him a box of NGK plugs because the split fires were broken tips off. So, and I think Nathan was leading once, and I think the tip broke off.
We could do an entire podcast about the split fire plugs. And I, honestly, like that company that actually ended up getting sued for essentially false advertising and like completely bankrupt the company.
Oh wow!
Yeah, they made claims that it never did what it, or that it did something that it never did. But yeah, there's a famous story of, I think there was a, like, the getting back to the, or like, tied into the shoe story was, like, there was a letter or a note from Mitch with the shoes. It says, you should use these shoes. It'll help with your racing career.
Yeah.
And then, Ramsey comes in with an NGK spark plug and says, you should use these. It'll help out with your racing team. Having the tip break off. I think you're right. He was leading at the time. Which it's awfully tough for a 125 to make horsepower.
I think it was that was the week later. Like it was like a 2 or 3 week.
Oh, perfect.
That went down.
So. That is too funny. But yeah, I am surprised to see, like, you know what? Like, I am surprised and I'm not, because I know Mark Finnis, he was knocking down, amateur race wins left, right, and center this time last year. He was very impressive at Loretta Lynn's. He had really fast lap times. He ended up losing, the gas ride that he was on. He was basically kind of like the gas amateur kid last year. He was very highly touted, mm-hmm. ended up losing that ride. And went to Club MX, and the podcast that I did with him, you could dig out some quotes, but this kid is like, he must just like fall asleep watching to Rocky IV. Like mm-hmm. he is just into training. I think he like referenced guys like Tom Platz and like Dorian Yates, these bodybuilders that build these massive physiques, mm-hmm. and train at just these extreme levels. And he's that kind of trainer. So color me not surprised that he's fit enough to be running inside the top 13 at nationals. And if he can do it consistently, he'll continue to be the top rider over at Club MX for the rest of the year.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I like, you know, Talon Hawkins. I mean, he obviously swapped positions with, Cochran, but,
right.
You know, on the AO, AEO team. I mean, he's a good local kid from around here, a really good kid. I'd like to see him move a little further. I think he can, but it might take a few years for him to progress.
Yeah. And I think that, in his case, I think Supercross is still a little bit more, his cup of tea. Like, mm-hmm. I think if you asked, like Truth Serum, Talon Hawkins, are you more excited to ride Supercross or outdoors? I think he'd say Supercross every day of the week, mm-hmm. twice on Sunday. And not to say that he doesn't love moto, but hey, if you had to choose, what would you go with? I think that's well said. Flipping things over to the 450 class, we have some rare air to talk about. First of all, for the first time in a very long time, in fact, a calendar year, Jet Lawrence is not only didn't win, he wasn't on the podium, finishing actually 12th overall, 6th in the second moto. Clearly, before we get to the amazing day that Chase Sexton had, we have to talk about the number one, who is no longer your points leader. He had a hell of a crash in moto one. I believe it was on lap one, jumping a downhill triple that it wasn't designed that way, but I'm probably willing to bet that the first double that ever existed in the sport of motocross was probably not built that way. It's just someone, probably Dan Amigu Chandler, was able to jump it the way it was set up that way. And mm-hmm. yeah, the guy, he like it like miscalculation, what have you. Say what you will. Jet Lawrence hits the deck hard. It could have been so much worse than it was. Like, I think he got really lucky that he didn't come away with more of an injury. But yeah, he was quite worse for wear afterwards, after qualifying first. Not like 24th in the first moto, no points, and then a 6th in the second moto. What was your take on the situation with Jet Lawrence's crash and then the rest of the day that ensued?
Well, it's, you know, when you watch that, I was sitting in traffic watching on the laptop when it happened. And,
the local authorities must love that.
Well, I wasn't, the laptop was in my son's hands. So I was just,
okay. That makes it better.
Yeah. So, you know, when you look at it from the angle from behind, it's horrible. When you look at it from the angle front on, it didn't look that bad, but the damage was the bike when it collected him. I mean, that's where Deegan got a little lucky. The bike didn't really tag him. I mean, it's not so much the crash at times, right? It's the aftermath of the bike that collects you. drove him into the ground pretty hard. He got straight back up and got going again. I mean, he did miscue, obviously. Should he jump that on the first lap? Hard to say. I mean, if that didn't happen and he did win and Sexton still went from last to second, what would have been the bigger highlight? Lawrence going four motos in or Sexton going 40th to second? Either way, they would have both been good highlights, right?
Yeah, no, and like it was a very interesting day. You had a lot of guys leading laps for the first time in a while. Obviously, Hunter Lawrence leading his first set of laps as a 450 professional. That was very encouraging. Chase Sexton ends up getting him late. He leads three laps of that moto, and he only led one lap of the final moto. Let's just talk about that last moto with the 450s. Chase Sexton just loses the rear end coming around one of the sweeping corners early in lap one of the 450 moto, second moto. And from then on, honestly, he had clean air, and he put his head down. And actually, it's funny, I watched the moto afterwards. I didn't watch it live, but I knew that he won. So I was actually watching it being like, he actually gets this done. So how does he get it done? He was 24th on like lap two. He was like a hot knife through better on these guys.
I knew that he would have made the top 10.
Oh, that, for sure.
I mean, he was always going to make the top 10. Now, when he got to, there was a part there where Jet Lawrence was kind of moving forward a little bit, but I think it was purely adrenaline and he's good. He was better than the guys in front of him. And whether they got a little tired and he was just purely on adrenaline, but that eventually wore off a little. But I mean, Sexton was on a mission. I asked a few guys, I was like, well, what was it? Was it the combination of Jet going down? Was it like today was his day? And they just said it was a combination of everything, really. He put his head down and he knew what he had to do to win win the day. I say win the race, because all he had to do was get to a certain point and he had it in a bag, but he didn't stop. He got Plessinger, two corners to go. I mean, he rode like a champion. And then really, when you look at that, there's only a handful of guys in history that have done that.
Yeah. First one that comes to mind is James Stewart. Second moto, Bud's Creek, 2002. Steve Boniface takes his front wheel out about halfway down the brand new start straight that they had built at Bud's Creek. And the craziest thing about that moto, if you watch, the first time I watched or have seen highlights of it was in the Great Outdoors 2. It's one of the most kind of like reposted segments from that video series, just because it's so spectacular. But I went back and watched the broadcast. I have a ton of broadcasts from back in the day. James makes the pass around, I think it was Ivan Tedesco, at like about 15 minutes to go. He might have been in first at the halfway flag of that moto. It wasn't just that James went from last to first. He went from last to first in like half the moto's time. That, to me, is maybe the most insane performance from going with the last to first. But of course, it's funny on the broadcast, like, oh, it's never happened before. Of course,
if you want to go even deeper and longer than that, I mean, Roger was at Honda when RJ was last, won the race, but Ward won the championship at LA Coliseum. It was like 86 or 87, I think. So it's been done. And Roger's been there twice now.
Yeah, no, he's right there for it. And obviously, Hurlings did it. Was it 2018? I want to say.
Like that.
I think it was 2018. It was Ironman. I think someone told me it was 2014, but that sounds way too long ago for that to have been the case. I don't even think that Hurlings was in the 450 class that long ago. And if he was, then good Lord, I'm getting old here. But either way, extremely impressive in performance. And at the very end, like obviously I knew that Chase had got it done. I almost kind of felt bad for Plessinger in that moment because I'm like, he's been leading every single lap of this thing. He's been like just absolutely wire to wire, and then he just gets it snatched away from him by his teammate. I'm sure he was good spirits about it because that's Aaron Plessinger. Like, he's good spirits about just about anything. He gets a solid second on the moto. His first podium of the year as far as, the outdoors is considered. And, good to see from him. But yeah, you can't say enough about Chase Sexton. 1-1 on the day. And now you're points leader. I'm impressed.
Well, I mean, that just opens up a whole nother can of worms on a few levels, right? Because he now has the points lead.
Right.
Then you have, I'm just looking at this, you know, you've got Lawrence now sitting in sixth with 34 points behind. We know Jed is going to bounce back. Sexton now has the target on his back. So then, you know, who's going to be the one to falter? Because now you've got, what, you got 34 points or whatever. So now, Jet would have to win the next 6-7 to get the points lead back.
Yeah, that's
possible. I mean,
24
points. Sorry. There's a lot.
Plessinger
going on
there. And Cooper are tied on 69 points. Nice.
Right. Yeah. Sexton 90, Hunter Lawrence 82, Plessinger 69, Cooper 69, Anderson 67, Lawrence 66.
It's all tight.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got, you still got a lot of racing to go. So,
yeah.
Like I said, there's so many ways to look at that. Sexton still has to keep winning. Jet's going to bounce back. So how many, you know, if Jet comes back and wins the next two in a row, cuts that points lead, then it's the teeter-totter switched again, right? It's like, how am I going to control this? He's just beating me. And then when you're the manager of the other guys, Anderson, Barsha, Stewart, it's like, well, what are we going to do? Like, we're already 40 points behind.
Yeah.
How do we salvage this year against these guys? You know, and that's when you start reinventing the wheel and you're testing every week. And that's the downside of the racing teams.
Well, for sure, is because like, There's only one guy, maybe two guys that can be like basically like winning regularly, trading off wins. Like I think of like an 07 outdoor season, in the 250s with Townley and RV. Like I don't imagine those two guys were doing a ton of midweek testing because they knew both their bikes were unreal, but like, yeah, like it's like for guys like Justin Cooper, Anderson, Ferrandis, Barsha, like they have to be basically like throwing the kitchen sink at the bike because none of those guys expect to be 7th in points, 8th in points, 9th in points. Like when when Freddie Norrin is nipping at your heels, and nothing to besmirch the good name of Freddie Norrin, but the things that are at his beck and call are completely different than the guys like Christian Craig, who of course is coming back from an elbow injury.
Right.
But like, if you're over at, Rockstar, Husqvarna, you're expecting, Malcolm Stewart and Barsha to be at, like, in another world compared to Freddie Norrin. And right now that's not the case.
Right. For sure. And I think Ferrandis will get better as the season goes on. Again, new team, kind of last minute.
Yeah.
He was sick, had some injuries, and so on. I mean, he's a past champion. I mean, all these guys have got a championship. They all know how to win. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, like, all these guys, like, they're all going to get better throughout the year, which tells me that a lot of their results aren't going to change drastically. Just the pace is going to get that much higher. And that's why when, if we happen to see a Webb show up or a Tomac to show up, and honestly, I honestly don't expect either one anytime soon, especially because they just had surgery. And as the Nationals continue to go on, and it's a shorter series than it's ever been, I don't hold out a lot of hope to see those guys out, like, because when they have to step onto the treadmill that's going 150 miles an hour against the best in the world, that's how more accidents happen. And if the goal is to come back and contend for the SMX World Championship, which is now, I guess, the focal point of the North American motocross world, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, aside from wanting to appease the fans and go racing and show up for sponsors and stuff like that. Would love to see, I'm never going to turn down seeing Eli Tomac make riding a dirt bike look really easy. Just from my experience within the industry, I have a hard time seeing it. What do you make of sort of your middle or your back half of the top 10 in points right now? Guys like Marshall Welton, showing extremely well. Grant Harlan seems to be reinvigorated. He seems to be improving and catching some more fitness, finally sort of getting over that pretty nasty injury that he sustained at Motocross Nations last year. And a little bit of a step backwards for Colin Park, although he's still very young in his career. I would have expected him to be maybe a little bit ahead of some of these guys. Or am I asking for a little bit too much from the young man?
No, I think you're right. I think they're all in the you know, you got Derek Kelly there as well. Dean Wilson only did the first round. Justin Hill, you'd think he'd be a little further along. Roman Pape, they're all somewhat privateers and trying to make it happen. There's a lot going on there. I like Phil Nicoletti sitting in 11th, and he's already dropped a moto. I mean,
yeah, I think we might not see Phil for a little while. I think update, but that looked pretty bad. There's a difference between hurt and injured, and Phil will ride hurt. He'll get up when he's hurt. He didn't finish that moto, which means I think he's injured. So
I mean, we haven't seen, you know, Colt Nichols was out. You know, there's still a handful of guys that are out, right, that, you know, which is, it's kind of like that rainforest, right, when the big tree falls down and there's growth underneath. And I think that's what you're starting to see with a lot of these, 10th to 20th guys that are getting a taste of it, realizing they can do it.
That's a good analogy. That was prophetic. Jesus.
Well, I mean, like, you know, no offense to Chris and Craig. We know he's had a hell of a career and he's coming back from injury. And, you know, you've got these guys that are, you know, semi-privateer that are knocking on his door. You know, so that I think, and that's what I mean. Like, that's the gap that, you know, someone says, well, I can really do this, or I have a chance. Mm-hmm. You know, whether they say, hey, can I get a ride at Rockstar Husky? That's a different story. I think, like, those guys.
Grant Harlan's going home thinking, like, I just went 11, 12, 10, and tied on points with Christian Craig. Like, where's my Fox deal? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that's. And it's got to put some wind in the sails for Harlan. And at the same time, maybe, like, Christian's got enough things on his mind with his elbow feeling the way it does.
For sure.
But that's gotta be tough. Like, both motos starts basically where he finished, 13th. At least he didn't move backwards. That, like, we'd be putting a little bit more of a cautionary flag out for if he had gone backwards in both motos. But,
Well, I mean, and it's just, you know, natural attrition to a point as well. And I mean, like, there's, you know, Shane McElrath in 21st. You know, I'm sure these guys from 10th, you know, Freddie Norrin or wherever, all the way back, are going, well, I'm going to go talk to the Suzuki guy.
Yeah. Right?
Like, why, you know? So, yeah. All that.
Yeah. Shane's got to get his homework done. 1 point from the weekend isn't going to cut it. And he's actually, He'll be thankful that they now give a point for 21st, because last year, this time last year, he would have received no points. He would have went 21-24 for no points on the day. But yeah, Shane McElrath, he probably didn't have visions of battling with Lorenzo Locruccio, Jerry Robin, and someone named Tristan Perdon.
Right. Yeah, I mean, how long has he been? What's he, 15 years now? As a professional racer?
Gotta be. He turned pro the same year as RJ, and I think that was 2013.
Right.
So 12 years, okay. Somewhere around there, I think. And Shane was a bit of a late bloomer. Like, he wasn't exactly like a amateur phenom on 80s that was just like carving it up. Obviously, he was very good. All these guys do a lot of winning when they're very young. But I don't know that he has a ton of championship plates from Loretta Lynn's. In fact, I think he only has the one. But either way, I think like a guy like Shane, honestly, if he's looking to land himself a really good ride for next year, he needs to put in some results for the remainder.
Yeah. It's a results-based sport.
Yeah.
Right? Unfortunately, you know, you're only as good as your last race. I mean, and then you've still got, I like Josh Moseman out there on the 350. I think that's awesome, and he does a good job. He hasn't scored a point yet either, which, you know, it's still going to be tough, right? To score a point, you've really, really got to be on it.
Yeah. No, it blows me away just how fast these guys are and just the amount of skill that they have on a dirt bike. I think I counted 80 entries in the 450 class, 71 in the 250 class, just shy of 200 people who have way too much skill on two wheels lining up and testing their mettle at Hangtown. And you'll probably have just as many at Thunder Valley. And there's a lot of them that go home, more than half go home very disappointed with how their weekend went. A couple of Australians, Brad West and Zach Watson were in the mix. Are you familiar with those guys?
I know Brad West from a long time ago. I haven't spoke to him in a long time. I do not know Zach Watson at all. But it's good to see, like, you know, there's
the other guy, Zach Watson. That's like,
it's, yeah. it's good to see that, you know, it is a bit of a multicultural race at times, right? It's good to see other people from other countries come in and try it and experience it. I think that's what makes it pretty good. And they're building friendships for life, really, in some of those guys.
Yeah, it's all about making memories and doing their thing on two wheels. Before we let you go here on the podcast, and thank you again for making time for us before you load up your beautiful CR500 into the truck and then speed on down the 15 freeway. I guess you're probably on the 215 first, but either way, you're going to rip through Vegas and the rest of that amazing drive. Hopefully it's during the day so you can take in the scenes. But, how big is round three? This is either a weekend where Chase Sexton really establishes himself as the guy to beat the rest of the season, or is this the weekend where Jet Lawrence comes back and reclaims his throne? And yeah, he probably doesn't take the points lead back, but definitely lets everybody know that he's the big dog under the tent.
The shot I've seen of Jet after the race walking off, I mean, he could barely walk, right? I heard that he had the foot peg took a massive gash out of his calf or front of the leg somewhere, whether that requires stitches or not, I don't know. Like you said, very, very lucky he doesn't have a hairline crack or a break or anything like that. I'm sure he did not ride Monday or Tuesday. Maybe he got back on a bike today or maybe tomorrow just to see how it feels. I would assume he's going into Colorado with very to no seat time. Sexton will have the upper hand. Now we're going into elevation. I spoke to a few guys about it. It doesn't tend to worry some of these guys too much at the elevation on a motorcycle. On a bicycle is a different story. So again, it's going to come down to fitness and strength. And I think that Chase going in strong and with winning both motos it can work both ways, but I think that he'll probably, he should be able to get it done.
Yeah, no, I think it's so, a lot is made of the elevation. If you watch the broadcast every year, I wouldn't say I shake my head, but like it's not like they're racing at the top of Mount Everest. It is at elevation, but I think the bodies are maybe a little bit more affected than the bikes themselves. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see sort of how this all shakes out. If Chase Sexton's able to rattle off another race win, that's just going to build his confidence. And even when Jet is up to speed and up to sort of feeling the way he was 5 days ago, he'll have a formidable opponent in the name of Chase Sexton. And I gotta say, I thought the number four would look funny to me. Of course, Carmichael running it for the longest time. I actually kind of liked back in the 90s when it used to change, like the numbers would change hands almost annually, unless your name is Jeremy McGrath.
You used to sit there and wait for the AMA to release all the numbers, right? And it was only the championship guys. And they adopted that from, the NASCAR. I remember that going down because no one really wanted to do that. They were all proud of their numbers from their efforts from the year before.
That's right.
So.
And then, of course, for the longest time, so many numbers in the top 20 were essentially held by guys who weren't necessarily like that distinction anymore. Like, I think there's probably a lot of people who are like, as much as Kyle Chisholm earned the number 11, I think he earned it in 2008, and he's had it ever since. And by all means, he earned it, and he can keep it for as long as he wants. But if you're just a fan and you're like, hey, that number 11 guy, he must be the 11th best guy in the nation, correct? And you're like, no, not really, no. He's still incredibly talented and probably well within the top 50, but not quite 11th in the minds. But also then you, of course, get like guys like Ken Roczen in 94. It's kind of they run the whole gamut. You got like I'm sure that I don't know that there's a lot of people who are watching who are like, who's this number 96 guy who's leading the first moto? That is like, how is he the 95th or 96th best guy out there? And all of a sudden he's winning. This is completely wild. But either way, I kind of liked it back when you'd have like Yogi would wear four, and then who ran four in the middle. Like, I guess Bradshaw's known for four.
The Dogger had it for a while.
Dogger had four.
I mean, Baggett was the last one to really run four.
Yeah.
Before,
To me, it looked funny when he was on Pro Circuit, because like you hadn't seen a single digit number on Mitch's bikes for quite some time. I'm trying to think of anyone aside from someone who wore one, throughout the 2000s. I can't think of anybody. The only other guy that I can think of that ran a single digit number, for Pro Circuit was Ricky, who wore it for 8 races in 1998. For the Supercross series, and then of course wore his number one while defending his outdoor title. Baggett and Baggett held the reputation that comes with that number very well. And honestly, it looks good on Chase. I like the font. I'm a big optics guy. It's got to be like it's got to look right, because honestly, I gave Bubba Pauly over at the International Supercross team all kinds of crap at the beginning of the year when he had a different font for Freddie Norton's number 22. I'm like, it's got to change. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, it's closer to like a particular year of Chad's bike. I'm like, I don't care. It whatever you're trying to replicate, you didn't. And so they now have a more appropriate 22 on there. So I'm appreciative.
Right.
Going into this weekend, give me your race winners, for in both classes. Who do you think's going to get it?
Oh man. I don't know. I'm going to go with Chase. He's coming off a good win. I think that Jet is probably still a little under the weather. I think Hunter Lawrence will be there, and I don't know, I might say Cooper might jump on the podium here somewhere. I think Something like that. Something like Sexton, Lawrence, Cooper is probably where I'll go. Maybe Jetford. I might say Jetford.
Fair enough. I think he'll bounce back.
I think he'll be on the podium. I think.
Love it. What about the, give me a 250 class.
250? Oh, wow. It's hard not to go against Deegan. But I think I'm going to go with Valet to win. Deegan second, Kitchen third.
Oof, Kitchen's not going to like that. I'm going to tell him you said that. No, I won't. but no, I think you're pretty spot on there. I actually think that like Pro Circuit has historically done quite well at this race. I'm going to go with Levi to win. I think that he's sick and tired of not being at the top step of the podium. I think he switches that around this weekend. I think he gets the win. I'm going to go Deegan in second and then round out the podium, Vial. I think he's usually pretty solid on starts, but he's been struggling with that. And Thunder Valley is a very start-dependent track. If you don't get to the top of that hill and make the right-hand turn as quickly as you need to, it's going to be a long day for you. And track prep is usually part of that as well. It gets very rutted. If they leave it more like a freeway, it will make it a little bit easier to pass, but I stress a little bit easier to pass. I like Sexton to back up his win at Hangtown with another win. At Thunder Valley, I'm going to say second place, Justin Cooper. And also, I think that he gets a race win. He's always done well at Thunder Valley. He won a moto there, I believe, in the first moto. Or maybe it was the second moto in 2019 when he was battling with Cian Cirillo for that title. So I know he's got skills there. And then rounding out your podium, I think that Jet Lawrence has a good enough day to have the third spot on the podium and kind of get sort of back to where we're used to seeing him. That's my podium right there.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a big deficit to fill. So he's not going to cruise. I mean, I just back to Kitchen. I mean, I would love to see Kitchen win. I think he's an awesome rider, but I think that he probably just needs a little more time. You know, he's on a new team and a new bike, right? So there's, like I said, there's always a little bit of teething room there, but I think that he will get stronger as the race goes on. His start speed is good. Just towards the end of the moto, as he kind of, you know, that's when these guys got by him. I think if he works on that, he'll be a real contender.
Love it, man. Well, I've taken up enough of your time. It's 6:30 and you got to be on the road in 12 hours, which also includes trying to get 8 hours of sleep. time is a ticking. For those who aren't already following Hoppo Hoppo on Instagram, give your head a shake and then go follow him on Instagram. Listen along to our Racer's Mindset podcast that have been coming out every single week. Those are a lot of fun, but just go out and have some fun on your CR500, why don't you?
I plan to, trust me.
Excellent.
It's going to be a great weekend. As long as I roll out of there on Saturday afternoon, that's all that matters. But I'll be having fun. Don't you worry about that.
Yes, sir. Well, you have yourself a great rest of your day. Don't hang up just yet. But for podcast sake, we're going to cut things off right there.
Thanks.
Welcome to Best 42 in the land. All ages from kids up to grown men. Walk through the gates of the coal miner's daughter to make a point clearer than the creek water. Who's the best? Who's it gonna be? In Hurricane Mills, Tennessee. Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wind spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Times this one week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2 out at the ranch. Golf carts, pit bikes, lights and rowdy fans. Play the national anthem and everybody stands. Smell the smoke from the two strokes riding by. The 30-second card's on its side.